This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us today. June the 29th marked 4 years since the death of Hachalu Hundessa, the iconic Ethiopian singer, songwriter, and civil rights activist who was known for both his powerful music and messages of peace. Seattle-based musician and artist Yadesa Bojia, who produced a tribute song to Hachalu's life, tells me that Hachalu's death left an indelible mark on the country, but that his legacy continues to resonate in the hearts of Ethiopians, particularly the Oromo people, for whom he was a passionate advocate.
Hachalu is simply one of the most interesting and more impactful artists that rose in East Africa, or Africa at whole, that are kind of be in the same way with like the people like Bobby Wine and people who actually use their art to speak truth to power and stood up and, you know, sacrificed their life. Basically, Hachalu was imprisoned before. Hachalu will also be killed, as we already know, sadly. But what makes him different from a lot of other musicians and artists is his clarity and understanding of human rights, and using his voice to speak, and using his art to speak to for millions. He actually died for that cause. I don't think anyone comes equal with him when it comes to that kind of impact. As a person, he's actually a very warm and nice, friendly young man who have kids and family and beautiful wife, a father and mother, and a long, rich history of where he grew up. Hachalu is a very interesting guy who actually knows his ancestors, and he called their names back like 12, 13, 14 generation. He is a clear understanding of who he is, why he's standing for. And a lot of people get him wrong because they equate his love for his people as a hate towards them, but it will never be the case for him. He was always open and clear and his goals, and is a very warm and loving person.
And what happened to him? How did his life end?
Well, Hachalu, as you already know, when Chepea Oromo protest was started in 2014, if the government of Ethiopia was changed, I think I remember talking to you about this movement and your show. If that was the movement of Oromo people, Hachalu's voice was the anthem for it. He's basically the person who actually initiated a lot of people, make them understand what they're fighting for. And his lyrics are very powerful, bone-piercing. You will never be the same after you heard them. He actually ignited all that movement. Mm-hmm. So when the new government come to power, they are very happy for what he did because he can't bring them to power. But they're also very worried of what he can do if he speak or sing. So in that sense, he's always been looked after in a very close eye and magnifying lens. But then his life started getting a very interesting turn. He started going to the capital, like in Finfine, people are just coming to him, like there are videos online, people trying to attack him in his cars. People are calling him names because he speaks about Oromo rights openly. And he's not a kind of person who shy away or afraid of saying what he believes. The last interview he did with Oromo Media Network, he spoke about the longer Ethiopian-centric mindset of thinking in Ethiopia, because in Ethiopia is like a very vast, ethnically rich country with 80 plus ethnics on it. But if you see Ethiopian culture, it is very hegemonic, and it doesn't invite or give welcome to other ethnic groups. And he spoke about that. So when after that interview, there is a lot of anger in that area. And so he basically gets shot in the nighttime. He was driving somebody from home just to, so she can take a cab. And a person approached him and shot him and killed him. And it's a very sad way of dying. And I remember hearing it from the hospital and looking at, I'm all sadly watched the photo of his body. And that was, to this day, it hurts me very much to think about it. But that's how we lost this great and amazing artist. And guess what happened? After Anu died, there is no peace in Ethiopia to this day, as you already reported, as you already saw, war after war. The makeup of the country, I'm not saying that is because of Anu, but it is actually what magnified and the problem, and this is where we are today. And so we lost this great musical ambassador that spoke about human rights and fought and stood up for his own people. It just get lost just like that.
How do you think his music contributed, for example, to that political awareness around the period of 2014 to 2016 during the Oromo protests?
So that's a very good question, because Oromo people are the majority of Ethiopia, like the largest ethnic group in Ethiopia, more than 40 million people. In some cases, there are more than 50 million people. It's one of the largest ethnic groups in Africa. And but the thing is, Oromo people are in two different, in many different areas. They speak different kind of dialects, and Oromo people are not united in a sense to fight and to stand up and to protect their rights. What Acalu did, and people like Acalu contributed, is trying to unify that. And people see that unity through his music. When he speaks about the pain of Oromo people, of what that land grab caused in their life, how they can be displaced and the history can be changed or erased, his voice clearly unified the country, the Oromo people. And so that is the glue that kept it all going. That's why it's very powerful. And that is why any government is afraid of Acalu's kind of voice, is because it creates this narrative that a lot of politicians fail to accomplish, but this music actually accomplishes that.
Did you ever have an opportunity to meet Acalu or collaborate with him? And if so, can you share any memorable moments with him?
Well, I was lucky enough to meet him multiple times. Acalu was, he called me my big brother. Last text I got from him is like, "How you do, my big brother?" And sent me some art and sketch that he did. He's always looked, he called me big brother for some reason, but we are from the same area when we go up. So my families know each other, and I know his father and his mom. So I met him multiple times. I never get a chance to collaborate with him, not even I think about collaborating with him. But after he passed away, I made a single called Hachalu for him. And it is actually really, really liked around the world, streaming millions of times. In a crazy way, people in Japan, in places like that, where they listen to this music that I did for them. I also able to get a chance to submit his work to the Grammys, and able to feature him on the Billboard magazine and things like that. So I try to my best to enlighten his life, continuously talk about him, so the memory that they want to die never pass, never dies. Right. So that's why I'm grateful that I'm getting this opportunity that we talked about him. He's actually the one of Africa's bright and shining actor and musician and artist that passed away and close African history.
And 4 years down since his death, how do you see his music influencing the current social and political landscape in Ethiopia?
Well, what Acalu did is he showed how music and art can be used to express people's feelings. Because of that, a lot of young Oromo musicians are now are using his legacy to fill that gap. It's a big shoes to fill, but they're all trying to do it. and artists like Andu Alam Gosa and a lot of other great Oromo artists are coming and filling that gap, and you know, showing that music can be actually used to speak the truth to power. And that was his legacy. The other legacy he have is like through his family, they have Ajalun Desas Foundation, which helps raise money for displaced people, which helps raise money for people who are unheard, who have hard time in life. They donate money to that. His wife is doing incredible work, and we are all proud of her her work and her accomplishment. And she still also asks for his, she don't feel like she got justice for his murder. So she's still pleading for that. So that's the legacy of Ajalu Desa. The long lasting message is that people know that they can express themselves through art, and art is a weapon that cannot be denied, that cannot be taken away from people.
Now, you yourself are a multidisciplinary artist based in the diaspora, but you're very much connected to the issues back home. How do you draw inspiration in your own career?
I personally...
Ajalu's life, sorry. Yes.
Yes. I personally draw a lot from him because first, Ajalu is the one who never been apologetic about what he's doing. He knows clearly what he wants, and he speaks truth to power. But at the same time, he's not mean. He's not negative. You will never find Ajalu singing bad about other people. But he was just enlightening light where a lot of people are not here and seen. And the people who are invisible start being visible because of his work. So I'm always follow that kind of guidelines in which we are all need to be positive. We are not to be, need to be a brothers and sisters keepers. And also to do that, sometimes we do uncomfortable things where the comfortable have to feel the pain of other people through art, through music. They have to see this kind of thing. And you're not going to buy you fans, they're not going to buy you peoples, but at the same time, you plant a seed in their mind by showing them what these invisible people are. This is something that we drove way back from a lot of movements from the time of slavery, from the time of African colonization movement, from all these independent things that we did in Africa, including apartheid, is that the more we raise our voice, the more we speak about these important issues, it will be painful, but we'll get to the mountaintop. That is what I'm drawn from it.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Ethiopian visual artist and storyteller Heroi Aregawi Gebremariam has lived in many places since leaving his country to escape a civil war. He's currently curating an exhibit titled Navigating the Now, featuring his own pieces alongside those of artist Akilu Temesgen and Dereje the Messi. He tells me that his work not only serves as a visual diary of his travels to places like Lamu and Kenya, but also an invitation for viewers to contemplate the evolving nature of cultural identity in a globalized world. Heroi's art is a diary of his travels and experiences. His journey from Ethiopia to various places in the world has been documented on his canvases. One such place that has left a significant mark on him is Lamu in Kenya. The island's unique blend of cultures and architecture have inspired some of his art.
So this series, like part of, especially the works, the four works here are inspired by my stay in Lamu. One of the striking things about the Lamu is beyond the fact that it's a cultural melting pot, it's rich history, good food. They have a unique building technique, which involves mixing corals with lime. Most of the houses in Lamu are white or broken white, and you can have multi-story buildings like narrow alleys, and like these beautiful bougainville flowers, and these old buildings, plus their refined carpentry, which like you find everywhere, like in the rich people's houses, the poor people's houses, there is always a patterned carved doors.
For Herui, every new place becomes a chapter in his ongoing story of home. His paintings invite viewers to contemplate what home means, not just as a physical space, but as a feeling, a memory, a connection.
I've been here for, it's been only 5 months since I made my move to the US. But between the place that I call home in northern Ethiopia, in Tigray, and moving to the US, I've stayed in for more than a year in Kenya. The question have been lingering.
What is home to you?
It should be somewhere between, like, it should be an overlap of like feeling safe and as well as feeling like belonging there, right? The idea of home is not just about the safety, it's about knowing you're surrounded by people who share same values, same language, like where you don't have to be conscious all the time, like you, like a place where you run on autopilot, but you, and like you're accepted, like you don't have to make plans every single morning to in order to be a human, an accepted human.
Whether it's in Zanzibar,
yeah,
whether in Lamu,
yes.
Why did you choose to paint the door?
Probably I was blown away by the beauty of it first, but that's one of the things I noticed, how the doors are different in back home in East Africa, the places that I have lived in Ethiopia, in Kenya, in Uganda, especially in the small towns or even in the bigger towns, doors are usually open. And like the default state of doors is open. So someone needs to put an effort to close them.
His journey began in Mekelle, the city of his birth, which he was forced to leave due to a civil conflict. But his memories and love for his homeland remain alive through his art.
These pieces are titled Makalongan and Makala 2. They depict their depictions of my hometown, Makala, where most of my family lives. And I made these paintings in 2022 while the war, the Tigray war was still active, and there was no communication with people living in the region, my friends and my family. So this is practically me trying to lift myself up and to leave a love letter to my hometown.
What's up, Africa? You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
Nancy Iraba is a busy woman. The award-winning Tanzanian marine scientist wears many hats as a researcher, coral reef restoration expert, and dive master whose work is making significant strides in marine conservation in Tanzania and around the continent. Nancy is the co-founder and underwater program lead at Aqua Farms, a marine conservation organization that is based in Tanzania. I sat down with her recently at the Nat Geo Explorers Festival here in Washington, D.C., and she talked to me about her efforts to restore and protect the country's vital marine ecosystems.
Well, let's start off by talking about your journey from a non-swimmer to a dive master in just 3 months. That's truly, truly remarkable. Could you share with us what inspired you to embark on this journey and how it has shaped your career as a marine scientist and a conservationist?
Okay, so first of all, being an African marine scientist, being born in Tanzania, it is not so common seeing people like myself desiring to do ocean sciences or to venture in opportunities or careers in ocean sciences. So I initially wanted to become a medical doctor, but it was during a time in which the Tanzania Commission of Universities, they were placing, basing on the need, so marine sciences was an emerging career, so I just found myself there. I remember crying. I remember telling my dad, what am I going to do with this career? And then he encouraged me and said that opportunities are emerging, why don't you just go and see what lies ahead? And then as I was taking that journey, I'm so lucky, I can say, that I have had opportunities of having exposure. Like I was in 2017, I got a chance to be on board the S.A. Agalas research cruise ship, and we were collecting samples from off the coast of Southeast Africa. And I remember questioning myself, because everything I saw in that ship was so amazing. First of all, the senior scientists whom we were mingling with, they were the scientists in which they were specializing in different areas in the ocean, from crabs, you know, from corals. And it just showed me how small I was and how the ocean, how big it was. So I decided to pursue my master's in marine sciences. But as I was studying marine sciences, again, I came to realize that despite Africa having exceptional coastline, again, only a small proportion of African marine scientists could swim or dive, which actually limited our ability to explore and study the marine environment. So I started to desire, you know, being underwater. I remember even when I used to go to my Instagram, I started seeing people diving, like, you know, those where people are not even of my color. Then I was wondering, like, who are the role models? And then I think the stars just aligned, and one day in a Zoom call, I was giving a talk regarding ocean decade, and Noel Koch, the executive director of NIOF, was there, and I remember he asked me, Nancy, can you swim? And I was wondering whether should I tell him the truth or should I lie, because already my branding, you know, I'm a marine scientist, so it is expected of me to have been inside the ocean to know how to swim. But I told him that I can't swim, and I told him the facts, that it is actually a reflection to about 90%, you know, of my locality. And Noel took a chance on me. So they were preparing a lab known as the NIOF Decade Dive Master Storytelling Lab, where they were taking 10 women, 8 from South Africa and 2 from East Africa. So I was lucky enough to be taken to that lab, and that lab was ending in 3 months. So I had to learn everything from the scratch, and in 3 months, it was really after a toil and hard training. Yeah, we went from being a non-swimmer to a dive master. Mm. I don't know if I can say that is in a nutshell, right, but that's the story.
Absolutely. So you're the co-founder of the underwater program,
yes,
at Aqua Farms organization.
Yeah.
And your work really has been instrumental in pioneering coral restoration efforts in Tanzania. Can you tell us more about your work in restoring coral reefs, particularly the methods you've employed and the impact you've seen?
Okay, yeah, sure. So soon after becoming a dive master, I was lucky enough to land a job in the northern part of Zanzibar in Mnemba Island. So with Mnemba, I learned a lot about issues about coral reefs, and I did my training there about coral reef restoration. And then when my contract ended, I went back to the organization. So Aqua Farms, I'm also amongst the co-founders. So I started the underwater program in 2021. So as I was pioneering the underwater program, so we identified areas in Tanzania, in the southern coast, in which they needed corals to actively be restored. But again, for me, it's very important my work to be connecting with people. So I questioned myself, how can I connect with people and also have an impact? We're coming to an impact, not only the ecological impact of how much area I've restored, but also people impact. Then it went back to my story that as marine scientists in my localities, they lack these hands-on marine conservation skills to do deep water research. So through the underwater program, I created an internship program in which every year I take marine graduates, about 4 to 6, and they get their dive certification with our partnership with NIOF. And after that, they contribute in the coral restoration, in which the impact which I have seen is that most of these youngsters who have worked with us, they have gained hands-on skills. And after that, they have went to be employed in local and international marine organizations, something which is not so common before.
Mm. Yeah. Now, climate change obviously poses significant challenges to marine ecosystems in Africa and worldwide. How do you see your work, particularly in coral restoration and climate resilience research, contributing to addressing these challenges, specifically in Tanzania?
All right. So, for instance, like in Tanzania and even Africa at large, when you speak about coral restoration, it's an emerging field. It's a field that still needs to pioneer a lot of research. So what we're also doing is we have combined the restoration together with studying climate-resilient corals, because we believe in the face of climate change, we need to know what species can withstand high temperatures, so that at the end of the day, we can have some sort of knowledge exchange, and we can pioneer those species so as we can be in the age of the hope of saving our ecosystems here.
And finally, I want to talk about your engagement with the community or community empowerment, which seems to, central to the theme in your work. How do you engage with the local communities in Tanzania, and what strategies do you employ to ensure that their participation and support in marine conservation efforts?
Okay, so first of all, through the organization which I co-founded, AquaFarms, for us, our main theme is using community-based approach in all the programs and the projects which we conduct. So it is at the heart of every project. And also how we ensure participation is by engaging the community from the start, from the designing of the project. So it's not like we go to the community and tell them this is what you need, but otherwise we sit with them in one table and we plan and we co-design together in order to deliver. And we have found that having tremendous results, because at the end of the day, it creates sense of ownership to them, and also it brings immense results and impact to us.
That was Nancy Iraba. She's an award-winning Tanzanian marine scientist, researcher, and coral reef restoration expert. She joined me at the National Geographic Explorers Festival here in Washington, D.C. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Climate change affects us in many ways. For example, many of us, most especially here in Uganda, we've been having a challenge in areas of the east, for example, in Mbale, where we have been having landslides due to excessive rains.
As a Uganda, I've moved through different regions, eastern, western, central. And when I was a child, I used to see the climate we are having now. It is totally different we used to have. Increasing drought, increasing floods has come in. It affects the general nature of climate or weather. Definitely, it is humans who are paying for this. Government has come with the idea of planting more trees or reserving these areas which we have already as forests. We reserve them. We stop deforestation. We stop these people cutting down forests. We stop these people who are encroaching swamps. We stop these people who are doing mining in their lakes and rivers. All this will try to mitigate this. And these actions have to be taken by our governments.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all our guests and to you, our listeners. You can catch up on previous episodes of Upfront at voaafrica.com/upfront. You can also connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, on Instagram, and on YouTube. Remember to like, to share, and then to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one I judge, this one I judge.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent, old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.